Koti Vaishna Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinash Naimakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Tur Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamay Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Or Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Vipulay Srimati Bhakti Vinata Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharni Nivasesa Sanyavani Paskutya Desatarni Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Uta Parikamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Sha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitham Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitham Sha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
April 26, 2013, in Simachalam, Germany, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 5, Durvasa Muni's Life Spared, Text 26. Sri Suka Uvacha, Atam Barishtanash Tanayeshu Rajam. Samana Sileshu Vichridja Dira Vanam Visheshatmani Vasudeve Mano Dadadvastra Guna Pravaha Shri Suka Uvacha Atam Barishash Tananeshu Rajam Samana Shileshu Vishridja Dira Vanam Visheshatmani Vasudeve Mano Dadadvasta Guna Prabaha
Atam Parishastana Yesu Racham
Shri Sukhuvacha. Shri Sukadev Goswami said, Atta, in this way, Ambarishaha, King Ambarisha, Tanayeshu, unto his sons, Rajam, the kingdom, Samana Shileshu, who were equally as qualified as their father, Visrijya, dividing, Dhiraha, the most learned person, Maharaja Ambarish, Vanam, into the forest, Vivesha, entered, Atmani, unto the Supreme Lord, Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, who is known as Vasudeva, Manaha, mind, Dadhat, concentrating, Dvasta, vanquished, Guna Prabaha, the waves of the material modes of nature. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thereafter, because of his advanced position in devotional life, Maharaj Ambarisha, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property among his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudeva. Purport. As a pure devotee, Maharaj Ambarisha was liberated in any condition of life because, as enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami, a devotee is always liberated. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira nikilash vapya bastashu jivan mukta sa uchite. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami thus instructs that if one's only desire is service to the Lord, he is liberated in any condition of life. So why is Prabhupada talking about this? What's his point? Yes.
Perhaps that we don't need to
Okay, we don't need to go into the forest, and particularly, who didn't need to go? Maharaj Ambarish didn't need to go into the forest. He could have, he was already perfect. If one's only desire is service to the Lord, he is liberated in any condition of life. So what's the criteria for liberation? Service to the Lord? More, a little more than that?
Devotion.
Devotion. Specifically?
Pure devotion.
Pure devotion. How does Prabhupada define that here?
As the only.
Yes?
Only desiring to please Krishna.
Only desiring to please Krishna. One's only desire is service to the Lord. So if one's only desire is service to the Lord, he is liberated in any condition of life. So to become liberated, is it a matter of changing your condition? What's it a matter of? Changing your what? Yes?
My desires.
Your desires, yes. Maharaj Ambarisha was undoubtedly liberated in any condition, but as an ideal king, he accepted the Vanaprastha order of retirement from family life. It is essential for one to renounce family responsibilities and fully concentrate on the lotus feet of Vasudeva. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarisha divided the kingdom among his sons and retired from family life. Sri Sukha Uvacha, Atambarisha, Tanayeshu Rajyam, Samana Shileshu Vishrijyadira, Vanam Vishetatmani Vasudeve, Mano Darad Dvasta Guna Prabaha. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, thereafter, because of his advanced position in devotional life, Maharaj Ambarisha, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property among his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudeva. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadambini describes a symptom of the unsteady neophyte devotee, Kanista. Kanista means not steady. Anista Bhajana Kriya. And one of these symptoms is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur calls indecision, where a person thinks, should I renounce or get married? Should I preach or should I just do bhajan? Should I live in the West? Should I go to Vrindavan? What would be better for my spiritual life? This condition or that condition? This condition or that condition? So why is this a symptom of an unsteady neophyte devotee? Yes.
Because he thinks that his condition might affect his devotional service, but actually it's just the desire which actually accounts.
Very good. So the neophyte devotee is very externally engaged. Just like the materialistic person believes that the way I adjust my circumstances is the cause of my happiness. That's the entire focus of a materialistic person. I have to live here, I have to have this kind of house and this kind of job, I have to marry the right person. I was talking to a devotee a few days ago who was saying, you know, you have to take years and years to decide who you want to marry because it's the most important thing in your life. And I said, that's ridiculous. He said, life is only this long, it's only 8 billionths of a second of Lord Brahma, and you're not going to be happy by marrying or not marrying. He said, just get somebody who's emotionally and mentally stable and who's compatible and deal with it. You know, it's ridiculous. And someone is thinking, you know, exactly how I live, where I live, who I live with, what I do, that's going to be the source of my happiness. And the neophyte devotee thinks like this in terms of their Krishna consciousness. They just substitute Krishna conscious for sense gratification. They say, oh, if I want to be Krishna conscious, I have to live here, and I have to live like this, and I have to be with this person, I have to do this. And the person's whole consciousness is externally based. They don't realize that Krishna consciousness is a consciousness. It's not a place. Otherwise, how could Prahlad Maharaj be Krishna conscious? Was he in a good place? Was he in a good place? Was he in a good situation? Was there anything about his situation that was favorable for Krishna consciousness? Anything? Was there, you have the Panch Anga Bhakti. Was any of that going on? Was any deity worship going on? Did Hiranyakashipu worship a deity of Vishnu? No. Were there any sadhus? Did Hiranyakashipu allow any sadhus? He said, don't even let them come in disguise. Was there any Sankirtan? No. Holy places? Reading a Bhagavatam? None of that. And yet, Prahlad was Krishna conscious. You could say, well, that was Prahlad. But that's the point. Have any of you read the book Salted Bread? Who's read Salted Bread? Okay. So these devotees, they were in a situation as bad or worse than Prahlad. They were new devotees, year and a half, 2 years in the movement. They weren't seasoned devotees. There weren't very many books in Russian at the time. So they hadn't read the books thoroughly, and the translations available also were very poor. The translations, instead of saying become a servant of Krishna, they'd say become a slave of Krishna. They weren't very good translations. So these devotees hadn't thoroughly read the books. But they were going out, they were printing the books, they were distributing the books, they weren't yet initiated. And yet, right, they were arrested and beaten, I mean really beaten, not just like slapped around a little bit, really beaten, teeth knocked out, back broken, and eye ruined for life. Hey, serious. And then they were put in prison. You think there's any good association in prison? No. Not only are there no devotees, especially when they were in the Siberian labor camps, but you're with the worst of the materialists. You're not even just with pious materialists. You're with robbers and rapists and murderers. That's your association. Was there any prasadam? There wasn't even anything decent to offer. I'm sure Prahlad Maharaj could get some decent food to offer. These devotees, all they had was bread and salt. And no books. No deities. If they even had japa beads, they'd be taken away and they'd be beaten. They had to make their own beads out of bread. It would take, it was about a 5-day process to make beads out of bread. And they would make a little strand of beads. And over again, the guards would find them with the beads and take the beads away and beat them again, and then they'd have to make the beads again. And not only did they continue in such a situation to chant 16 rounds and follow the principles, but one of them died in prison. Sachi Sutapru died in a Soviet labor camp, so you know the story, how he died. So the devotees didn't find out till later how he died. When they were on Sankirtan, they met one gentleman who said, "I was the cellmate of your devotee in Siberia." Sachi Chuta got very sick, understandably, that you would get sick in such a situation, even if you were young and strong. So he got very sick. He was in the hospital of the labor camp. Not that they actually give you much of any medical treatment in the Siberian labor camp. So he was there, and he got very weak, could hardly move. And this man explained, one day, he woke up, and he seemed to be recovered. He was full of energy, and he said to the cellmate, "Please take the razor, shave my head, except for a little piece of hair in the back." So he did that. And then he took some toothpaste, and he put it on. He said he put it on like that mark all of you have on your head. You know? And then he said he took a magazine, and he cut up the pieces and folded it and made a necklace out of it, and he took the bed sheet and put it on, and he sat down and started to chant. And the man said, "Then I had to leave to see the doctor. When I left, he was sitting in the middle of the floor chanting. When I came back, he was still smiling, but he wasn't chanting anymore. So I wanted to tell him I was back, and I shook him. I'm back now. And when I shook him, he fell over. He was dead." So one can become Krishna conscious in any situation. Ahoitakiya pratiyata. What the devotee concentrates on is whatever situation I'm in. Prabhupada wrote a wonderful letter to Jayapataka Swami. Whatever is meant to be, that I am doing. So if we've dedicated our life to Krishna, we're chanting 16 rounds, following the principles, reading the Shastra, serving the mission, then whatever is meant to be, that I am doing. Let me do it with all attention to every detail, for Krishna's alone pleasure is my motive, Prabhupada said. So that is the key. Wherever I am, whatever I'm doing, whatever Krishna has given me to do, let me do that. What does Prabhupada say here? How did he say that? If one's... Anyone remember from the purport? If one's only desire is service to the Lord. So we may have some desire for service to the Lord and some other desire, but if our only desire is to serve the Lord, then there's no question that any circumstance can entangle us. It's not possible. Krishna consciousness doesn't have anything to do with one's circumstance. And is it possible to be some Babaji living on the bank of Radhakund and be not Krishna conscious? Is that possible? Indeed, it is possible. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said some of these people, they're not living in Radhakund. They're living in Narakakund. Naraka means hell. You know, it may appear there they are living in Radhakund, dying in Radhakund, but don't think they're actually Krishna conscious going back to God. That's not a fact. That depends on one's consciousness. And someone in a Soviet labor camp, you know, he's going back to, is there any doubt where he went when he died? So he's going back to Godhead, and somebody else, they're sitting at Radhakund chanting all day long, and they may be going to hell, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said. So it's not just where I situate my body and what externally I look like. And therefore, Maharaj Ambarish, although he was, you could say, the epitome, the symbol of a materialist. What is the ultimate symbol of a materialist? It's a king. Rajagun, the basic principle of material life is Rajagun, and of course Raja also means king. And so that is what all materialistic people want, more or less. great opulence, right, great wealth, great power, surrounded by beautiful people glorifying you. Anybody just does what you say, opulent food, opulent clothing. Yes? Well, this is what everybody is working for, to be the king. So he was the king. He was the king. But still he was Krishna conscious. So of course Bhagavatam is full of such stories. Gopi Pranadana Prabhu once said, if the Bhagavatam was just full of stories of brahmanas, nobody would read it. You know, he sat down and meditated, and then he meditated some more, and then he meditated some more. But it's all full of these kings. They go to war, and they have this thing, and that thing, and this thing going on. Yes. So he was already perfectly situated. So why then did he change? Why did he change? So what did he do when he changed? What does this mean? He went to the vana. The word here is vana. So he changed because manodadhad. Visheshatmani vasudeve manodadvad. He wanted to take his mano, his mind, and dvadvad, concentrate it fully on atmani vasudeva. So we find Bhishma at the end of life. Of course, Bhishma never had the chance to go to the forest. He died on the battlefield. One could say lying on the bed of arrows for a couple months was a sort of vanaprastha, I suppose. Although that would not be our preferred method of taking vanaprastha order. But it said that Bhishma Dev, when he's lying on the bed of arrows and he's talking to the Pandavas, it said, he who fought on thousands of battlefields with thousands of men and could speak on thousands of subjects with thousands of meanings withdrew his mind from all other subjects and fixed it on the Lord. So this fixing one's mind on the Lord. Because when you're a king, although everything can be dedicated to the service of the Lord, you have to think about so many things. Like Bhishma, he was could think about thousands of subjects with thousands of meanings. And Prabhupada says in that purport, one's mind is strewn on so many different subject matter. So this idea that at the end of life, one should focus one's mind on the Lord. So what did he give up? Well, he gave up family life. Family life means particularly sex. So he gave up sex, gross sex, subtle sex. And he gave up his occupation also. His occupation was to be the king. He gave that up. And he gave it up responsibly. I mean, we do have examples in the Bhagavatam of kings who gave up their kingdom without taking care of succession, like Anga, who just left in the middle of the night. Or even Dhruva Maharaja's father. He left before Dhruva was installed. But generally, the kings make sure they don't just leave. When they leave, they set up someone else. So he had trained his sons, he had trained his successors, he made sure they were as qualified as he was. Then he gave them the responsibility. So he gave up his occupation, and he gave up his engagement in family life just to focus his mind on the Lord. So why did he do that if he was already liberated? What was his purpose in doing that? So two reasons are given here. One is to be an ideal king. One, to set an example. Because people in general, Prabhupada says here, it is essential that one renounce family responsibilities. One has to retire. One should not go on with one's occupation and one's family into old age. And the other reason was his own mentality, as explained here. He no longer desired to live with material things. It wasn't the service he wanted to do anymore. He had lost his interest. So this is a natural thing that happens even to materialistic people. These ashramas, except for the sannyas ashrama, the first three, the brahmachari, grihastha, and vanaprastha, are seen even in materialistic society in some form. People go to school, then they have a job and an occupation, and they're engaged with enjoying their senses, and then they retire. Yes? The normal trajectory of a human being. And, of course, why does a person go through this? Because one's desires and mentality changes. So when you're only 10 years old, you don't want to have your own house and your own car and your own job and take care of a wife or a husband. You want to study. And once you get to be, you know, 15, like Lord Ramachandra married at 16, Mahaprabhu at 14. I want you to get to be somewhere like that, 15, 16. Maximum, Prabhupada says maximum for brahmacharis, 24, 25. First hand always says 24, other places he says 25. So that's the absolute top limit. By that time, a person feels, I want to do something in the world. I want to have a living. Most people think, I want my own place. I want my own independence. The grahastha ashram is more independent than the brahmachari ashram. And most people want association with the opposite sex. That's normal, unless you're either liberated or diseased. It's normal for people. So then you take responsibility, and you're the main contributors to society. And then at a certain point, you don't want this anymore. This happens again even among the materialists. They call it the midlife crisis. Now what the materialists do when they have this midlife crisis is they go to the doctor. And they say, give me some medicine so I can keep having sex. You know, or they find somebody else. This is very common. Because they've lost interest in their family life. So they leave their wife, they leave their husband, and they find somebody else. Yes, isn't this what's commonly happening? And they lose interest in their careers. And they try to find a new career. That's because there's no guidance in the society what these natural changes of mentality are meant for. So although the devotee can serve Krishna in any circumstance, still one should notice, what are my natural phases of life? That one should be aware. What is my propensity? Sometime between 15 and 25, one should be saying, what is my natural propensity? Do I honestly want to be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, which you can only do in the grahastha ashram? Do I naturally want to do that and do something in the world? Do I want to just stay a student my whole life? So that's, some people do that. That's rare. Do I want to just stay a student my whole life and just study, beg for the guru, live in the guru's ashram? And of course, when we beg for the guru, we also distribute books. So do I want to just take care of the guru's ashram and distribute books and be told what to do my whole life as a student? Do I want to be under that kind of discipline? You know, am I ready to go to the forest immediately? So of course, Manu Samhita says that one cannot take vanaprastha or sannyas without going through the grahastha ashram. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and Srila Prabhupada tell us that one can indeed do so, that one can go directly from the brahmachari ashram to the vanaprastha ashram. So one may decide, oh, I'm ready actually to go to the forest and to have full concentration on the Supreme Personality of Godhead through austerity. So the vanaprastha ashram is more independent even than the grahastha ashram. So of course we have many people in our movement who go, some of them successfully, not all of them, directly from the brahmachari ashram to the vanaprastha ashram and then to the sannyas ashram. And we have a few people who remain actually in the brahmachari ashram their whole life, not just as brahmacharis, but actually in the ashram, where they're under strict discipline and regulation, and they simply study and beg and distribute books. They're not actually going into some independent life. But one has to be honest, what is my particular mentality? Like today we're having a wedding, yes? So why is that there? Somebody was saying to me yesterday, the grahastha ashram is a step down from the brahmachari ashram. I said, no, it's a step up. From the brahmachari ashram, one should go to the grahastha ashram or the vanaprastha ashram, generally. Generally. So why? If one can be Krishna conscious in any situation, why are there these changes? Why make any changes at all? Why not just stay in the brahmachari ashram or just stay in the grahastha ashram? Why make any change? Because we do have a natural change of psychology, and therefore, if our only desire is service, the nature of that service may change over our life, almost definitely will change over our life. Most people will start getting a natural desire. Oh, I want to do something in the world. I want to go out and do something for Mahaprabhu's mission. I don't just want to stay in a temple and distribute books and be told what to do. Do this at 9:15, do this at 9:30. I want to go out and do something. I have so many desires to do this. I want to make films, or I want to start a business, or I want to start a school, or I want to start this. Then I need to serve Krishna in the grahastha ashram. I feel, actually, I just want to focus my mind on Krishna and live in the forest. I just want to engage in austerity and meditation and preaching. Vanaprastha, also, you travel to the holy places. I just want to travel to the holy places and preach and study. I have no desire to do something in the world. I have no desire for my own money or my own place or my own car. I don't need any energy from some woman or for some man. And I'm ready for the Vanaprastha ashram. So one should be intelligent like this and honest. What are my real desires? Because someone fit for the Vanaprastha or Sannyas ashram, if they get married, it will be a problem. They'll get married and then they'll keep traveling to holy places. And just, you know, engaging in meditation and chanting. They won't take proper care of their wife, their husband, their children. And one who really wants to do something in the world and have money and have a car, and if they, you know, stay in the brahmachari ashram, then they just simply cause a disturbance. So one should be honest. If one's going to be a brahmachari, one should be a brahmachari. If one's going to be a grihastha, one should be a grihastha. If one's going to be a vanaprastha, one should be a vanaprastha. If one's going to be a sannyas, one should be a sannyas. Just a Prabhupada compare taking sannyas to the monkeys standing on the shore looking at Lanka. And some of them say, well, I could jump halfway, but I don't know if I could come back. And Prabhupada said, not like that. Not. I'm going to try. Somebody try sannyas for a week, see if I make it. So how to have the Lord's service is my only desire. That also depends on who I am. So I have to see honestly, who am I in this life? Who am I at this moment? What is most suitable for me? That one should do, of course, in consultation with Guru and with senior devotees. And then honestly take that position and realize one position isn't any better than any other. To meditate on Krishna. But one position may be better than another for me. And it may be better than another for me now. Like Srila Prabhupada told one devotee, don't eat so much. And the devotee said to Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, you told me to eat a lot. And Prabhupada said, did you believe me then? So believe me now. So at one time in life, what's best for our only wanting to please Krishna is let me live in an ashram and go out begging and distribute books and just do what I'm told. And another time, what's best for our service to Krishna may be to have a house and have some money and take responsibility for wife, husband, children, and so forth. Take responsibility for our kingdom. At another time, what's best for our only desiring to serve Krishna may be to walk away from all of that. Turn it over to the sons. No longer be concerned about doing some big thing in the world and having money and having house and all this. And travel to the holy places. So there's so many holy places in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And then at one point, one may be to civilly die. No more connection with spouse, no more connection with children. Just simply 100% dedicated to fixing one's mind upon Krishna. So that may be. And this ashram system is very scientific. So I can say, having spent 23 years in the Grihastha ashram and 17 years in the Vanaprastha ashram, that it's a very scientific system. It's a system that is in accordance with the natural psychology of a human being. The natural development, the natural biology also, the natural way the body changes throughout life, the natural way the psychology changes throughout life. And one who goes through these ashrams systematically according to their own psychology and their own mentality does indeed find that they are a great help for one's spiritual advancement. Conversely, one who doesn't do so, one who artificially stays in the brahmachari ashram when they should marry, or one who as a grihastha thinks, well, I don't want to be a real grihastha, let me be a half grihastha. Let me not have children, this is the most common one. Let me marry and not have children. Let me marry and not have a source of income. You know, let me live like a half vanaprastha, half grihastha. Then you never get the benefit. You know, we see people also, even frankly, in the Vanaprastha Sannyas ashram like that. Oh, let me be a sannyasi, but with a big palace and 300 adoring women. And can we be honest? Is that all right? Are we allowed to be honest? So, you know, you look at this and you say, are they a sannyasi or a polygamous king? So that doesn't help. You know, that's not the idea. Not externally you pretend to be a grihastha, but actually you're trying to steal your pleasure from the renounced ashrams. Or externally you look like you're in the renounced ashram, but you're stealing your pleasure from the grihastha ashram. Oh, I'm just going to stay a brahmachari, but you have your own bank account, and you have your own car, and you just do whatever you please. That's not the brahmachari ashram. So this is a very scientific system. Now, having said all that, at the present time, it's very hard for anybody to be properly anything. Unfortunately. You know, brahmachari ashram is supposed to start at what age? 5. So we have people starting the brahmachari ashram at the time they should be leaving it. Prabhupada says a maximum age for the brahmachari ashram. For most people, some people might stay lifelong, is what? 24, 25. We have people entering the brahmachari ashram at 25. That's rather odd, isn't it? And what does Prabhupada say is the maximum age for marriage, maximum age at which one should enter the grihastha ashram? No. 24 for men and 16 for women. It's in the first canto. He says it should be compulsory. He said marriage should be compulsory. Maximum age 16 for women and maximum age 24 for men. So again, we have, and nowadays, people aren't even thinking about marriage until they're 40 half the time. Isn't it? Which is, of course, absurd, but anyway. And we have people, first they take sannyas and then they become grihasthas. All backwards. Yes? And first they have 20 boyfriends, 20 girlfriends, and then they get married. So this is our unfortunate situation. And people, they've been divorced and remarried 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, 10 times. Yes? Is this correct? We have to admit? Or I see more and more, especially in Europe, people living together without marriage. You know, they'll say to me, oh, I'm not sure if I should marry this person. Oh, really? Well, aren't you living with them? Oh, yeah, I've been living with them for 5 years. But we're not married, and we're not even engaged. So what to do? This is a very difficult situation. If we tell people you have to be a proper brahmachari, proper grihastha, proper vanaprastha, proper sannyasi, practically nobody does it. So we really need to take shelter in this concept that if we just desire to serve Krishna, one can be liberated in any condition. As far as possible, we should situate ourselves in the ashram and varna that is suitable to us. Varna is just, again, for the grihastha ashram. And the ashram change during life. So as far as possible, we should do that. But we shouldn't be like the unsteady devotee who's thinking, my whole Krishna consciousness depends simply on how I am situated. However we are situated, whatever, sthanisthita, whatever position we're in, just be Krishna consciousness. Whatever situation. Think, how can I serve Krishna now, in this situation? Who knows? We may not live long enough to be in the ideal situation. If we're spending all of our energy planning to be in some ideal situation in the future, and we forget about Krishna now, and we may die 5 minutes from now, what is the point of that? Or that ideal situation may never manifest. Whatever situation in, Savaimana Krishna Padaravinde. How interesting that Maharaj Ambarish, Manad Dadhat, he wanted to concentrate on his mind on Krishna, therefore he went to the forest. But Savaimana Krishna Padaravinde, his mind was already concentrated on Krishna. So whatever we're doing, you're running an empire, running a business, simple life in the ashram where someone else is taking care of you, taking care of 10 children, whatever. Just think, how can I please Krishna? How can I serve Krishna? How can I please Krishna? How can I serve Krishna? And if it becomes clear to you, wait a minute, I have some other desires and some other mentality that I'm not able to express in this situation. Then you consider, is it time to change my ashram? Do I need to move from the brahmachari to the grahastha ashram, or from the brahmachari to the vanaprastha ashram, or the grahastha ashram to the vanaprastha ashram, or from the vanaprastha to the sannyasa ashram? Is it time for me to make some adjustment so that I can continue to focus my mind on Krishna? And continue to think, only the Lord's pleasure, that's my sole interest in life. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, chastisements. Yes? Well, traditionally, there's no brahmacharini ashram. Traditionally, the girls got their education at home or in some day school. They didn't live in an ashram. For most women, it's not a natural situation. Prabhupada says it's harder for women to undergo austerity. Of course, some. There have always been some. Like Gangamata Goswamini. She renounced, of course, she didn't live in a brahmacharini ashram exactly. She was. She never married. She refused to marry, which was radical in that society, for anyone to refuse to marry, what to speak of a woman. She was made the queen because her parents had no son. She was the only child. So she was made the queen. Her name was Sachi. And then very quickly, she didn't wait until, like Ambarish, she didn't wait because she didn't marry, so she didn't wait till she had children to turn the kingdom over to. She didn't wait till she was old. She turned the kingdom over to the ministers. And she left. And she went to Radhakund, where there, with her friend Lakshmi Priya, she performed austerity under the guidance of her spiritual master. So she really went right to the Vanaprastha ashram. But she never really entered the Grahastha ashram. And then she lived as a Vanaprastha in Jagannath Puri, where, of course, she made the king, her, the king himself became her disciple, and she was preaching Bhagavatam in Jagannath Puri. So we have examples like that of women who were renunciates. And there's references throughout Bhagavatam and the works of the Goswami to renounced women, some women who never married, or women who lived as brahmacharis, but that wasn't generally the standard. Of course, nowadays, you know, when if a unmarried girl wants to become a devotee, if we just say, well, just stay with your family may be eating meat and so many things, so we have some situation for brahmacharinis. And of course, we have to say it should be as similar as possible to the idea of the brahmachari ashram. What the brahmachari ashram is for. What is the main duty of the brahmachari ashram? To study. It's brahmachari ashram again means a school. It's for training. Prabhupada said the gurukula is meant for training in values and giving specific training for a livelihood. It says this in the second canto. Those in the brahmachari, brahmacharini ashram, they should be getting training for a livelihood. They should be studying. And of course, the brahmachari goes out and begs on behalf of the spiritual master. As I said, our doing that is our book distribution. And we distribute books, distribute prasadam, and collect donations for the spiritual master and for the mission. So Srila Prabhupada engaged the young unmarried girls like that in the same way. At one point, Prabhupada talked about having a woman's ashram where the women made paintings of Krishna and sold them to maintain the ashram. So he toyed with different ideas like that. Is that all right? Yes?
The mentality that you're describing of the neophyte, it seems, at least externally, very similar to, we may even express ourselves as my nature is changing, or my psychology is changing, whereas mm-hmm. it may actually just be that neophyte.
So how do you tell the difference?
What are the key...
Okay, how do you tell the difference between an honest assessment that I really need to make a change and just this external based, let me go here, let me go there? Well, one thing is, are you Krishna conscious now? Or are you saying, I'll be Krishna conscious later after I get a good situation? That's one key. So it's not that Maharaj Ambarish wasn't already Krishna conscious. He was already Krishna conscious. And because of his being already Krishna conscious, he was able to see that the best way to serve the Lord is to make some change. It's it's what's first, the cart or the horse. If I say, first I need to make some change and then I will be Krishna conscious, you're in that flickering thing. If you say, let me be Krishna conscious right now where I am, then as a result of your being Krishna conscious, you get the clarity to understand, oh, wait a minute, I'm not properly situated. This isn't what Krishna wants me to do. But you're already Krishna conscious. Do you understand the difference? So if you're thinking, you know, do I need to make a change in my life, first become Krishna conscious as much as you possibly can in the situation that you are in. Through that Krishna consciousness, you will get the clarity in consultation with others. Of course, you have to be careful which others. Some others may have their own motives for having you stay or having you change. You have to be careful. Be careful you don't consult with people who have something to gain or something to lose by you're changing or not changing. But first become Krishna conscious where you are. So I see this all the time. You know, if you think about, as a traveling preacher, what kind of things people come to me with. Of course, they come to me with really horrible problems that they don't want to tell anybody locally. So I get to hear the worst of the worst of the worst problems in this country. It gives you a very distorted view of the society if you're not careful. But one thing that people come to you with is, should I do this or should I do that, or should I do this or should I do that? And you see that in most cases, 95% of the time, maybe more, the person is completely externally focused. They're just looking at the particular external things. I'll give you a nice example of the opposite. Somebody who's a very good friend of mine who was in a situation where she was very unhappy. And her main unhappiness was she found, I just don't feel like I can be Krishna conscious here. I just don't feel like I'm rightly situated. And then she started praying to her deities, please, you know, give me some taste and some experience of connection with you here, where I am now. And that's actually what happened. She ended up fully loving her service and her engagement, and she ended up finding herself just naturally thinking of Krishna. And as that went on for a couple months, then it became obvious to her, this is not the right place for me. But it wasn't obvious until she was absorbed in Krishna in that place. And she could see, oh, this isn't where I belong. And we did a little exercise together where we looked at her real priorities in life and in service, which she knew were really most important things for her to do for Krishna. And then she could see, oh, I'm not able to do that here. So it was quite interesting. So that's basically how it works. Remove your consciousness from the externals and focus on, let me think about Krishna now, let me dedicate everything to Krishna now. Then Gyanadipena Bhashvata, then he will light up your heart. And then you can see, oh, I'm already properly situated. I don't need to change anything. I already have everything here that I need. Or, oops, boy, am I in the wrong place. You know, boy, this is not what I should be doing. Is that clear? Thank you for asking that question. This is important stuff, huh? This is very, I think, very significant. I mean, every verse in the Bhagavatam is significant, but I think this purport in this verse is particularly helpful for us. Anybody else have any questions or discussions? So bhakti is very nice. Even if you mess up everything external in your life, you can still achieve bhakti. As I say to people, even if you're on plan B or plan C or plan Z. Do you have Z in German? Is Z the last letter of the alphabet in German also? So even if you're, you know, even if your material life is a mess, you can still, even if the externals of your life is a mess and irregular, you can still become a pure devotee. But if you have the opportunity to have a proper life, then why don't you do it? If Krishna gives us that opportunity, we shouldn't disregard it, but go through the proper steps. So thank you very much for having me here. It's been lovely to come back to see Mechelen and see Lord Nisingadeva and all of his servants. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.